Welcome to Extraneous. We talk about His Dark Materials here. There's another Extraneous feed.
Oh, that's right. We split it off.
Yeah. There's another Extraneous feed for Supernatural, so you can go and subscribe to that one and listen to Leah and Takiya talk about his Supernatural on Proof of Confusion. And talk about Supernatural the way they do, which is very awesomely and in incredible depth. Here, I'm Melissa.
I'm Will.
And we talk about His Dark Materials, sun up to sundown.
Yep.
Dusk till dawn.
Yep.
All right, here's, you are listening to a Mischief Media podcast. Mischief Media has a bunch of podcasts for excited and passionate people like ourselves and like yourself.
That's right.
Go check them out.
Check them all out. Mischiefmedia.com.
Right now, we're talking about the television series, His Dark Materials. We did do a very in-depth trawl through book one of the His Dark Materials series. When we are done talking about the television show, we're going to have a couple of wrap-up episodes, and then we're going headfirst into Subtle Knife in 2020. We're really excited. Also, this episode is spoiler safe. That means that if you have not read the books, and what are you doing with your life? Go read those books. Just miss Christmas, miss Hanukkah, miss whatever you're celebrating or not celebrating this year, and be reading those books. Go read them. If you have not done it yet, you are fine until we start telling you that you should turn off the episode if you don't want to be spoiled. And that comes very near the end, so don't worry.
So in this episode, it's going to be a normal episode in the sense that we will recap our Dust Bears, which are our big concepts, people, ideas of the episode, and then our Dust Bunnies, which are like little items that we want to talk about.
Yeah.
But then instead of jumping straight into the alethiometer and all that stuff, we're going to list our three best and three worst things about the series in general. And then we're going to get into alethiometer and mixtape and extra award and all those things.
There will be no episode next week. We are going on vacation. Guess what I packed in my bag for our vacation?
A subtle knife.
A subtle knife itself.
Or so the subtle knife.
The subtle knife, so that we can get ready, because I have missed our book recaps.
They're a lot of fun.
Two full months of television show, and it's been so great.
It has.
But boy, I've missed diving in chapter by chapter. I think we might have to go like a chapter.
Yeah, some of these chapters in Subtle Knife, we're going to have to go, probably one chapter at a time. It's so dense. It's going to be so much fun to get it weighed into and pull apart and pile up and take apart and autopsy and
More words X-ray for break things apart. Dismember.
Dismember.
Get Dexter in there.
Yeah.
No. First of all, we have to recap what happened this week.
One of us does.
One of us does. It's me. I'm going to not look at the notes. I made notes. Here we go. Everybody Goes North. That's the episode. Everybody Goes North. The Magisterium, Mrs. Coulter, Asriel, Lyra. Everyone's like going to this one mountain. Various distances from this one mountain. Lyra appears at Asriel's laboratory. He's very mad about it, but then he's not mad about it because Roger's there, and he says so. He changes his mind in the creepiest manner possible, and Roger should really just turn around and run for the hills. I don't know why he didn't. Asriel tells Thorold that he's going to be leaving tomorrow. He's going to leave ahead of the Magisterium. Wow. There's a lot. Father MacPhail and Marissa Coulter have a conversation about the authority. This whole idea of the authority comes up. It's essentially God. Boreal goes to Fra Pavel about the reading of the alethiometer that he wanted, and Fra Pavel tells him that Grumman's son will lead him to a knife in a tower. And Boreal looks shocked by this news. Son, are you sure? Yes, you know who this is. So Boreal leaves with new purpose to go to the Will Parry household, where he finds dead Facebook retreat guy. And he's angry that the other guy, who it turns out is a detective inspector in the British police. He's very mad that he let Will get away, and he tells him to get him back. So the guy goes and he reports a missing child. So now all the police, all the bobbies have
I say, come back here.
Will Parry alerts on their walkie-talkies. And so I'm just going to follow Will's story through the end here. Will is walking around London, and then he follows a cat, and then he sees a door, and he goes into it, and we'll get into that later. Back in Lyra's world, she has two conversations with Asriel. One is about how she doesn't want, about how he's her father, and they unpack all that. Then another one about dust, where he kind of explains to her what dust is and the phenomenal energy that it exists between a person and their demon, and that the alethiometer goes by dust, and that the church thinks dust is sin, but he doesn't know what it is, and he wants to go and find the source and find out what it is and find out what it isn't, and basically wage war on all of existence.
That's all.
That's all. Lyra and Roger have a really touching scene where we get to be, we are shown what good friends they are. They fall asleep. Asriel kidnaps Roger, tells him that they're going to do a fun thing for Lyra, drags her up a mountain. Lyra wakes up, talks to Thorold, realizes what's going on, screams for Yorick Bernison. Yorick Bernison takes her. He can't follow her across a bridge, so she goes to try and stop Asriel from what he's going to do, which is separate Will from his demon, because what he just said was there's an enormous amount of energy in there, and he wants to use it. Marissa appears with a gun. The bears fight these zeppelins. And everybody's fighting, and everybody's screaming, and then Asriel does it. He kills Roger, and a door to the heavens opens, and then he and Marissa have sexy times in front of the door, sort of sexy times, sort of like PG-rated sexy times in front of the door to the heavens, and then Marissa says that she is not going because, Marissa, as they call her, says, Mrs. Coulter, says that she's not going because she wants Lyra, surprising everyone. And a surprise twist, she doesn't want to go into another world because of Lyra, not because of God, not because of anything, because of Lyra. Then Asriel goes to the door. Marissa goes away without seeing Lyra. Lyra tearfully says goodbye to dead Roger and goes into the portal in search of dust, because if Asriel wants to find it, maybe it needs protecting. That was actually a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of stuff. You did great. It's a long episode.
It is a long episode. It's like a full hour. So that is what happens. Our heroes are heading toward each other. And is it a spoiler to say they're heading toward each other? They've both gone through magical doors. Whether or not that means they'll meet each other.
Who knows where they're going to end up?
Who knows? But you know they're in it now. Will Perry's story has erupted. He is in this now. Lyra has new determination. She's following her own orders and her own steam. And she's alone with Pan. And she's going to do what she wants to do, not what somebody else says she should do the first time.
Yeah.
How did you feel about this episode?
I've been ambivalent about the whole series, I think even more than Melissa. And my ambivalence...
Way more than Melissa. Yeah. Melissa's like all cheery, happy. Will's like... Meh.
Yeah. And my ambivalence remains. But I also think that this was by far the best episode of like the second half of the series. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm generally positive, but I think that there are definitely a lot of positive feelings. I thought it was beautifully shot, for one thing. I think they continue to do some really cool... wonderful things with visuals, not just those dramatic final shots, which I thought were beautifully rendered and sort of very faithful to the wonder of the end of the book, but like the way they had the orange and blue lights in Asriel's lab, where you had everyone's face had like orange on one side and blue on the other. And I couldn't think of a reason why, like an in-series reason why, or even a symbolic reason why. But it was just so gorgeous and cool.
Yeah.
And it really made that lab seem like...
Pop. <Sorry.
laughs> I mean, kind
of. Really brought a little something to it.
Well, yeah, it did, in the sense that, like, it's supposed to be a very weird place. Mm-hmm. It's like a lab where they're trying to blow a hole in the fabric of existence at the far end of the world.
The world's a mess and I just need to rule it.
Exactly.
It's Dr. Horrible out here with his lab coat and his glasses.
He
really is Dr. Horrible.
Yeah.
I was really excited about this episode because if they could get their hands around it the way they did in this episode, I have hope for the rest of the series.
They seem to slow down in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. They had actual conversations that weren't just plot, 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 plot. The conversations with Asriel and Lyra, I thought were really good and interesting.
I gotta say, I am a complete James McAvoy stan at this point.
Yeah.
He eats every scene he's in. A couple of hokey choices, like when he welcomed Roger. Way to telegraph your hand.
Yeah.
But I don't think
sports term there from Melissa.
Was it like sports and poker in one?
Oh, yeah, I guess. Yeah. Where you like telegraph a pass by looking where you're going. Anyway.
Way to signal to the guy on base what he should do there.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Yeah. That's, I'm sports. So
I'm sports.
So no, but more of him, which is such a shame because Asriel's hardly in the rest of the story. He's really important to three. It's not that important to book two.
Yeah.
So they need to get to three so that we can have more James McAvoy because he's perfect. That's this like arrogant collegiate. When he turns back and looks at Lyra and says, "You don't come from nothing. You're the product of something extraordinary." He's talking about himself and Mrs. Coulter. He's an arrogant son of a bitch, but
he really
I love it. Yeah, no, this was a really, really strong episode. There was a lot less hokey. The script was trusting the book, which, again, when you swap and cut and paste things without a real solid reason, that's when it tends to go off kilter. But when you trust what's important about the book, the key things, that's when you're like getting it right. I worry, based on some of the choices of this year, what's going to happen in season two.
Yeah.
However, having the dynamic interplay of Will and Lyra, which, I mean, you've seen them in photos together at this point. Like,
yeah,
they filmed together. It's not a spoiler. There is another.
They're going to meet in some context at some point.
They're going to meet in some context.
Probably.
And probably. That's going to be really strong, I think. These are really two really strong young adult actors. And we're going to be in a whole new world. The weight of the setup exposition is now done.
Mm-hmm.
There's always exposition in these books, as so we've been much. Learning. There's so much. But the heavy lifting has sort of been done. And now we're on to a new adventure. And so I'm hopeful.
I think that Subtle Knife introduces a whole new set of concepts. So it's almost like they get another shot at it. Because like they really, I think, have substantially harmed the demon human relationship, but that relationship is somewhat less essential to the second book.
What they did with Roger, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, was really important and is going to pay off.
Yeah.
In series two and series three, hopefully series four, because I don't believe you when you say you can do series three in or book three in 10 episodes. I don't believe you. Do four seasons. Anyway. I believe that what they did with Roger will pay off in the way that I wish they had done the same with the demon relationship, and so that could have paid off.
Yeah.
But this was a lot of setup in ways that we'll talk about in the spoiler section. All right, should we get into our Dust Bears?
Yeah, let's do it.
Our first one's about Asriel. He has a last name.
He does.
We, in our summary of the book, had a whole little discussion about whether or not Asriel's last name was Balakwa.
We do, at least in the series, get some confirmation that his name is Asriel Balakwa.
Interesting that his demon's name is Stalmaria, which means Star of the Sea.
Yeah.
And his name is Balakwa, which means Beautiful Water.
I think we get some more depth to Asriel and some more of his complicated motivations in this. It seems like at first glance, it's just a kind of a generic, I'm going to bring down the bad guys kind of motivation. But it's really interesting the way he explains his purpose to Lyra, which is almost a purely academic interest. Like, Dust has been unfairly maligned. My interests are like scientific. I just want to figure out what it is because I think it might help humanity reduce the amount of people are persecuted for it. But then when he talks to Mrs. Coulter in front of the gate, he's like, no, I'm not just trying to figure out what Dust is. I'm trying to like go start an actual war with the authority, which is a stand-in for God, and set up my own Republic of Heaven, like my own kingdom. He's like, I want to like kill God and then replace him.
Yeah.
Which is, and like finding out what Dust is might be an aspect of that, but that's completely different than what he told Lyra. And you see that even in these moments that are ostensibly him being vulnerable and like letting someone in, he is still like actively manipulating someone. His own daughter for his purposes.
Yeah.
So like he is not a good person, but almost like in his mind, he operates outside of good and bad and like morality. And he's like amoral.
Interesting. He's less amoral here than he is in the book. Slightly. He does all the same things, but in the book, he seems to care less about them. He would have never apologized to Roger in the book.
Oh, yeah.
And
no.
For him to say, I'm sorry this is happening to you, or for him to smile at Lyra at all. He's very cold and dismissive and does not care about her sentimentality. Here, it's very much like he does care and is trying not to because right. He knows what has to be done. They've made him a more internal and more...
They've given him,
he's more conflicted.
Yeah.
No, he's not very conflicted. He's certainly just killed a child, easy peasy.
Right.
But...
And even when Lyra is there, he's upset because he knows that he will definitely choose to perform the intercision process on Lyra if that's his only option, is how I interpret that.
Yes. And
so
that's
like,
horrible.
It is horrible. It's like at no point does he ever, no matter what his internal feelings might be or how the little ways that he tries to make himself feel better, like not saying goodbye to her saying, oh, I have work and I'm so busy.
Mm-hmm.
At no point does he actually try to turn away from his path.
He also, he believes that he's either leaving forever or might die. So what does it matter?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. It's not his motivation is not self-preservation. Mm-mm. I think it is potentially self-aggrandizement.
Oh, definitely.
And
he's trying to kill. He's trying to kill God. He's trying to destroy the system in all the worlds, all of them.
But not just kill God. Like, I mean, ostensibly, yes, set up a republic in heaven. But I get the sense that just based on what we've seen in the series, I don't get the sense that he would be content with ruling. With like being part of a general democracy. Like, he will still want to be in charge of it.
I don't know about that. I'm halfway between he considers himself a benevolent ruler and he wouldn't want to rule. He just wants to actually free people from the tyranny of the authority. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's like going from fascism to democracy. Maybe, and democracy still have rulers. So
yeah, it does.
You know,
it would be interesting to see A, if he succeeds, and then B, what sort of role will he accept and what sort of role won't he accept in this sort of utopia that he's trying to create? I could see a world where he tells himself, like, well, they don't necessarily know what's good for them. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden he's like created himself as another god.
Yeah, he definitely thinks he knows better than everybody. Consider the fact that to speak up for God here, if
God moment,
if Azrael's going to put himself in charge of this new republic. Certainly the authority at some point had the same moment, right?
Yes.
In the creation of everything. Because if Azrael's going to create the Republic of Heaven, which then trickles down to all the worlds, and then surely he's missing the big problem with his theory.
Right.
Which is that probably the authority thought this way at some point. Also, when he was creating he or she or it or whatever,
yeah,
was creating all of everything. Jeff, yeah. Andrew, that's it. That's a joke that you don't get because you haven't listened to The Adventure Zone.
Shout out to The Adventure Zone. I listened to the first series. I got to get back into that.
You're getting there. But anyway, here in the series, we get a little bit of like collegiate sweater wearing.
Yeah, he can definitely play that role. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the reasons he's so effective. And I think this is also true of Mrs. Coulter, is that when they're playing that role, it is part of who they are. Mm-hmm. Like, and Lyra is the same way, right? The whole Belacqua family, like, are really good at leveraging true parts of themselves in the service of whatever they're trying to get done.
The Belacqua is not big on humility.
No, it's not. They don't have time. I really liked what Mrs. Coulter says to Thorold about Azrael. He's always been so reckless. He's never treated any of us well.
It's a true sentiment, but it's really quite hilarious coming from Mrs. Coulter. Mm-hmm. It's really a moment of stunning lack of self-awareness.
Totally.
You are just literally cutting children in half. Don't you talk about recklessness.
Well, I think she knows exactly what she's doing.
That doesn't mean she wasn't hypocritical here. Did she think that she didn't stand a chance of bringing down the entire magisterium when the world finds out that she's ripping children in half? So I'm just saying, yes, she knows what she's doing, but for her to stand in any room and talk to anyone about A, treating people badly, and B, being reckless.
Yeah, it's true, but I think she knows that.
It's also kind of random.
Try to give us a lot of Thorold backstory at the very end of the last episode.
Right? Suddenly we care about Thorold.
Right, yeah.
He's a very sweet Scottish guy. I mean, I love the actor.
Yeah, Gary Lewis, he's great. But yeah, but I did like that line, and it reminded me of the Great Gatsby line about they're careless people. Mm-hmm. You know, they smash up things and people and whatever.
They are exactly this way. One other thing I want to mention.
Yeah.
He kills Roger himself, which I know we've sort of touched on. Two birds, one stone here, production crew. Obviously, having Stel Maria do it would have been way more expensive. But I liked a lot more Azrael getting his hands dirty, having to pull down this. It's like jiggering on the way down. It's not smooth. It's rusty a little. It's this weird contraption he has rigged up at the, you know. And yeah, he needs to have skin in the game. He needs to fully own what he's doing. It was the right call. So that's Azrael in this episode.
Yeah. So we wanted to talk about Will's storyline in general. It's as a character here, he doesn't have much to do in this episode, but he is kind of, like most of the series, kind of off on an island.
I have a probably unpopular opinion.
Yeah.
I think they brought him in too early.
Okay.
I think that definitely he should have been brought in this season, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
but maybe two episodes later than they did.
Yeah, he doesn't have 8 episodes worth of story.
No, not even this little bit amount of 8 episodes worth of story. They stretched out what is essentially the first like 10 pages of Subtle Knife into this whole series. And I love meeting him now. I think this is absolutely right for the momentum of the story, for the filming reasons that they talked about.
Yeah.
100%. But I think that none of the scenes were particularly forward moving enough that made me like feel excited. That said, Amir Wilson is great.
Yeah.
What a great little actor they found.
I think it was AV Club reviewer has mentioned about like all these like 15 second scenes where we like check in with Will because it like we need, I guess the writers feel like we need to check in with Will every episode. Mm-hmm. They don't really contribute anything to the story. And they really, in my mind, kind of broke up the momentum of a lot of the episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could have just done it in 3 episodes.
As like Boreal talks to his henchmen and then talks to Elaine and then goes back to the car and then talks to Elaine and then goes back to the car. And like, how many times is he going to do this?
Also, we have like Explorer Boreal, which is, I cannot stress enough, Boreal is in the books, like slightly. He's definitely somebody who's searching for things. But the level to which we get some Boreal, unless this really was what was happening, is a function of we only see the book through Lyra's perspective. And maybe this really was happening behind the scenes. So I'm a little bit back and forth on whether this much Boreal is makes a lot of sense. Love the actor, though.
I feel like we need to get some more depth to Boreal's story. It's like we've spent a lot of time with him.
Yeah.
And we haven't really seen him do anything. But more importantly, we haven't seen a whole lot of his inner life. Like, whose side is he on? Why does he want what he wants? What does he actually want? Does he want the knife in the tower that was referenced? Does he want the boy? Does he want the letters? Why does he want the letters? Why does he care? I feel like we need to get some of those details soon because we've got an entire season of the same scenes of him.
Also, they say that Will is 15 in the show.
Yeah.
That's a change.
That is a change. That's much older than he is in the books. In the books, he's what, like 12, 13?
Yeah, 12, 13.
Yeah.
So is Lyra.
I like that Will is on his phone looking at the BBC site.
Yeah.
Which is a little like wink, wink, nudge, because it's a BBC series, but also would make sense because he's looking to see if reports have surfaced of the murder, which of course they haven't because Boreal told his henchman, who apparently is in the British police, like we said,
to get rid of the body. Which that is stunning to me because it's really dumb. The guy broke in. It's clearly explainable as a home break-in, unless he just doesn't want any questions around.
My guess is he doesn't. We don't know who this guy is, but we do know that he... Right. I wouldn't be surprised if he's someone that Boreal would rather not have someone do like a fingerprint scan.
That's fair.
I have no idea. I just get the sense that like he might show up on a list somewhere that would create some questions that Boreal doesn't want. But we don't know because we don't know anything about Boreal.
Nope.
So I think where we stand with Will is that, and we're going to talk a little bit more about him in the spoilers, but I think the plot here treaded water a little bit. And I think that's true in this episode. He didn't even have a full episode's worth of stuff to do in this this episode.
It's so frustrating to see treading water when you know that they're squishing so much else down.
Right.
And, you know, and everything's a choice. And so the choices they're making to spend so much time in the Muggle world, it's cheaper, let's be honest, spend time in the Muggle world.
And so it will just walk down a street.
Yeah. And when questions are asked of the creators on Twitter and they blame the VFX people, that says to me that they're rolling over on budget as reasons for criticism. And
there have been more than most series, it seems, a lot of excuses offered up about this.
Yeah.
And I don't know anything about it, and I'm sure they're all valid, but like people have talked about, oh, the VFX people told us to do this. Oh, we're working with a certain budget. Oh, we can't have, you know, children's labor laws. We can't have these people work too much. And I feel like I've learned more about the limitations of this show than of like all other shows combined. Prestige kind of shows.
Yeah, I get that.
I mean, limitations are limitations.
Yeah.
But the final product is the final product. And, you know,
right.
One way or another, like we said, you got to get there.
If the last 20 pages of a book are missing because they didn't have the money to print it, people would be pretty mad.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah. So.
All right. Next, Dust Bear. His good friend, Roger.
R.I.P., little dude.
R.I.P. This goes back a couple of episodes, but I think we've talked about it on the show. He looks remarkably younger than Lyra. Mm-hmm. Billy looked a lot younger than both of them.
Yep.
How is it possible that Billy's time to get severed came up?
Yeah, that was just a weird casting choice. And honestly, seems like kind of typical of this whole production of these just like careless choices that are maybe don't seem a big deal, but are just like inexplicable.
They're little tears at the internal logic.
Yeah.
And the internal logic matters. It does.
Right. You couldn't find a single like...
Oh, they definitely
12 could. Or 13-year-old to cast here.
But he was Cutie McCute Face. Cutie, totally. And they chose by Cutie Cute, which I... Hey, no shade. I get it.
Yeah.
But no way. I don't mean to go backwards in time, but it was remarkable watching Roger and Lyra. Roger is a lot younger than Lyra. He's got to be like 9.
That was strange that they would be such close friends, like lifelong friends, because they're not the same age.
Do you know what the show doesn't, and I don't know if the book does this, but do you know what the show doesn't indicate? Why Asriel needed a child and not just a person?
Yeah, it's a good point. So I think we're led to believe that intercision doesn't work for creating like the zombies as adults necessarily.
I think it does create the zombies as adults. And that it doesn't kill. Because think about the zombies, the zombie-like people at Bolvanger. And then they have the kids and they're not quite making it. But Asriel in this episode doesn't say the bond between a child and their demon. It says a person and their demon. Doesn't ever indicate, because Mrs. Coulter is doing it before they hit puberty for a reason. Asriel doesn't need a child in the internal logic if you take this series away.
Right. He doesn't care about like the theology of it, so to speak.
Asriel could have taken Thorold. By his logic.
Well, the issue is that Thorold doesn't have a demon.
There's also that.
Because he said we've never seen him on screen. We get a lot of Thorold.
I think we saw it once. There was one sort of in the beginning, first episode or something.
There was a little Thorold demon.
But fair enough point, you know? Is the implication that he would have cut Lyra instead of Thorold? It's either that or you needed a child and you never explained why.
Totally, yeah. And I think to be fair, that's a contradiction in the book, too. Mm-hmm. That part was straight from the book.
They did switch the thing. In the book, it's him in the bath. And in this, it's Lyra in the bath.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why. Maybe so that we can see Lyra kind of brooding and thinking.
I don't know why either. Also, they just cut out that great conversation from the book of like Rogers of like, I only look 5 minutes ahead. You know, yeah. I've been through so much. I've just learned in my life that. It's a great conversation and in the book, and it seems like they sort of recreate it with Roger's like, I've had a lot of changes in my life. I wouldn't have been here without you. I hope you keep changing my life.
It destroys dramatic irony, because what happens in the book is that Lyra is sitting next to him as he's taking a bath, not looking at him. And mm-hmm. the alethiometer is swinging around wildly. It looked like it's trying to tell her something. It's trying to warn her about Roger. And she asks Roger, do you want me to read the alethiometer, when he mentions that he's scared of her father?
Yeah.
And she asks Roger, and he literally says, no, we've known too much and bad things have happened. I can only see what's 5 feet in front of my head and for 5 minutes ahead, and that's going to be enough for me. Right. And she obeys that, and that's why he doesn't know any better.
Right.
And that could have been a great moment of dramatic irony, and there's just no reason.
Yeah. And it's like a growth moment for Lyra. Like, you don't have the luxury of these really nice moments. Like, it's really nice that you are able to connect with Roger and just like have a nice time like a regular kid, but you don't have that luxury.
No.
Like, the weight of history is on you.
It needs to be something that reminds her of her place in the world, that it was trying to warn her.
Yeah.
It has to pay. She's holding an alethiometer. You have to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Here instead, Roger says, maybe read the alethiometer. You know what? Don't. And that's it.
Yeah.
And she says, well, I think it only tells me what it wants me to know. And it just doesn't have the same logical step-to-stepness.
No, it doesn't. And I think what we get here, instead of a really interesting scene that really teases out the difference between these two characters and like their place in the world, we just get something that is very kind of cliched. And Roger's like, you're really great. I'm glad I met you. I love you. And then he hugs her.
Again, they've like, hugged a lot.
I don't know how many 9 to 12-year-olds Jack Thorne have spent time with. Not that anything Lyra does in the book is super realistic either for a 12-year-old, but like 12-year-old boys don't spend time with their friends hugging them and saying, I love you.
I will say, you know, kitchen boy doesn't have parents, only has Lyra. They've been through some things together. But there's been a lot of Roger hugging.
Yeah.
And a lot of just being a pure beacon of innocence to her. So it's like a little bit hit me over the headish.
Yeah.
A little.
Yeah.
We get it. We love him. It's going to be really sad when he dies, you know, but yeah.
It wasn't a bad scene. You know, once again, it wasn't what it could have been. I did really like the image of the two demons running and playing together.
Yes.
That was really nice.
More of that would have changed everything.
Yeah.
A little bit here, a little bit there. It wouldn't have even been too expensive if you don't have them. I mean, you do need them interacting with humans, but it is hard. Mm. We get that.
Yeah.
There was that funny shot of Stel Maria sort of looking like she was going to attack Azrael, but it was very clearly because it was easier to put her away from them in the CGI and not interact with them in the in the frame. There's also this weird line from Roger, which when he walks backward into the bathroom is very cute.
It's very cute.
That may be why they do it. Cecilia
is walking backwards too. Also very cute.
Mm-hmm. He says, parents, they're more trouble than they're worth. That's why I never bothered to get to know mine.
That's a weird line.
Also, he's an orphan. He didn't not bother to get to know them. They are supposedly dead.
I don't know if he's trying to joke.
I don't know.
You know what it reminds me of? Moonrise Kingdom, the Wes Anderson film, where the girl who runs away from her parents, who's like a little kid, runs away to be with the kid who actually is an orphan. And the one who has parents is just like, I wish I was an orphan. Their lives seem really interesting. Like they always have the best adventures. And the kid who is an orphan is like, I love you, but you don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. It's like, it was just a little like, I don't know, blasé. Like, is Roger really that? Like, good thing I never had to deal with parents.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't believe that.
I mean, he's just trying to buck up Lyra, but it was a weird line.
It's just a weird line.
Very, very strange. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Roger's death. Let's talk about Roger's death.
We would have liked more development of his relationship. I don't think Roger spent any time with Salcilia that we've seen before this, really.
Even in that moment, I don't think he was.
He wasn't looking at his demon.
No.
He was looking around trying to get out.
To be fair, same in the book.
Yeah.
Okay. He was screaming for Lyra in the book. You did have at least Cecilia saying, I don't want to leave you.
Yeah.
Which, look how easy it would have been, you know?
Yeah.
If and Pan was like trying
that
to.
That they're like, Cecilia's like trying to get lower and lower to get away from the blade.
Yeah.
Hoping something happens.
And then she just
fizzles out.
Goes out. It's really sad and really well done.
It is. Yeah. And I thought having Lyra reach the cage just in time and Roger like looking at her and like reaching out to her and then it was effective.
Yeah. Little guy with the one tear on his cheek.
He deserved so better.
These two horrible adults just uncaring of a dead children everywhere. Like,
yeah.
What horrible people. And it also must be scary to Lyra to see what she could be capable of if her parents are capable of this. Both of her parents are child killers. Murderers.
Yeah.
She's in the company of killers.
She also seems to have a will more powerful than any of them.
Yes, she does.
So.
She's got ferocious kindness. The more ferocious and playful sides of Lyra are not really in this performance. Mm-hmm. I love Daphne Keane. She was amazing at the end of this episode. But I really wish you had a little bit more of the angry and the kind of vicious side of Lyra.
I do too. And I think going forward, there will be times when we're going to need that.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope they write it into her character because I feel like they're already leaning on Daphne Keane to do so much work because she doesn't have a great script. And so she's trying to bring all these different things that aren't necessarily on the page to make her character more complex and interesting.
Yep.
So I would like to see her get a little more scripted help.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Our next bear
is the Authority.
First real, it was like passingly mentioned once, I believe.
Yeah.
Unless I'm making that up. But
it's very possible. I honestly don't remember if we've heard the name before. We certainly haven't heard it more than once or twice. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a big concept to throw into the final episode. It's almost like they realized they had we gotta get this
in. We need this overarching power that Azrael is going to fight against, and you need to care about it. So everybody starts talking about it. Azrael, Mrs. Coulter and Father McPhail start talking about it.
The voiceover while the troops are preparing for battle.
Everything is suddenly about the Authority.
Yeah.
But let's talk about it. The Authority is I mean, we're not spoiling anything. It's God.
It seems to be God.
Also, yeah. we can't be spoiling anything. That's all it's ever referred to in the book is the authority.
Yeah.
So I think you'll probably agree when you read the books, you should read the books. The authority really is the thing that the church claims its fealty to, mm-hmm. is the ultimate power.
Right.
It's God and is the entity that Azrael is going to wage war against all of creation.
Right. And beyond that, we don't know a whole lot. We don't know where he is. We don't know what he is. We don't know what his powers are. Like, how does he work? You know, does mm-hmm. he have like a bureaucracy? Is he just like an omnipotent being that's like in everything? So we don't get a lot of answers about what the authority is beyond the fact that it seems to be a God figure and it seems to be explicitly Judeo-Christian. It would have been interesting to get a little more detail about it, even if we didn't get any answers about the nature of God, which is a tough thing to provide answers for in the mm-hmm. first season of a series, but just like a few more hints about even if it's real or not. Yeah. Like, is this just something that the Magisterium kind of made up, you know? And so Azrael is going to go looking for the authority and just find more. Who knows what he's going to find, but not the authority, because the authority doesn't actually exist. We don't really know. And so it's a really intriguing, I mean, quote unquote, intriguing mystery. I do know, but it's set up as an intriguing mystery in the show, mm-hmm. but it would be cool to get like hints throughout the series, like build up the idea of this from the beginning.
Yeah. Dust bear of dust. So the Azrael and Lyra have a big conversation about dust, where they go back to what the church says about dust, mm-hmm. which is that it is actual sin, actual particles, like physical, you can hold it in your hands, sin.
Yeah.
Which is a crazy idea. Let's just call it that.
Yeah.
Like, the church is crazy. It's a crazy idea that is very similar to some ideas in our world. This is not like an uncommon concept, that the actual sin is actually physical and you can actually get infected with it.
Right.
On the opposite side of sin, it reminded me of oxytocin, mm-hmm. Which is the chemical that your brain creates when you're in love. In the sense of, this is something that love was believed to be, you know, magical and spiritual and
right.
not
it's like
definable,
an intangible concept.
Intangible. Yeah. It's not scientific. And then they found out that, well, there actually is a chemical associated with this.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it reminds me of. The same way that he says that the connection between a person and their demon is that same sort of thing. Everybody thought it was just this mystical, magical, spiritual thing. And it actually contains an actual ton, like a nuclear amount of energy.
Right.
So why shouldn't the church say this is actual sin? Dripping down from heaven, infecting us all.
Azrael makes clear that one of his goals is that he really wants people to see the world in terms of oxytocin, the chemical, instead of oxytocin, the intangible
right.
feeling.
But for sin.
Yeah, but for sin, for like...
Or for dust.
Yeah, like he says it's a particle, it can be studied, it can be measured.
Right.
Like, this is something, it's real, it's not intangible, it's probably not divine, it seems to be important to the universe, to like the architecture of the universe, and we should be researching that, not yeah. being afraid of it.
One of the big questions the books pose, and that this series will pose, is what is divine? What does it mean to be divine? If dust is a physical particle that you can study, does that make it not divine?
Right.
And is divinity, whose province is divinity? Where should knowledge be contained? Where should power be contained? Azrael believes that it's all in this idea of dust, because it's on everyone. It is attracted to everyone equally.
Yeah.
And so for him, this egalitarian view of who gets to have knowledge and who gets to have power is important to his worldview. This whole, it's one of the things that made me fall so deeply in love with the books, is that this idea that knowledge, this is knowledge, and this is awareness, and this is eating the fruit and knowing what's going on and not being under a authoritarian ruler's mm-hmm. thumb and not being reliant, you know, being your own self-imposed person. Is that still divine? I think it can be. It's just the question of what's at the top of divinity. Is it the authority or is it just authority?
Azrael and Lyra are reciting this passage from Genesis. Mm-hmm. And the line ends with Adam and Eve knowing good and evil, mm-hmm. except that Azrael says dust, as Lyra says evil. indicating that the church, the magisterium, has perpetuated a false translation of the original scripture to kind of hide the presence of dust. And they've substituted in the term evil. But like you were saying, if you look at the actual scripture, it suggests that maybe it's not good and evil, that those concepts are not like, don't have the roots in the authority. It's more like purity and knowledge.
Yeah,
neither are bad.
If you extract what Asriel says as the original iteration of the text, it's you will be as gods, knowing good and dust. And it's like, maybe that line was not meant to be opposites. Maybe it's just right. You'll know good, you'll know dust, you'll know things. And so this dichotomy that the magisterium has created sets up the power struggle that you have now, because if it's evil, then they can use it as fear, they can use it to control.
Right.
You know,
because knowledge and learning tend to
undercut.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Undercut like authoritarian governments. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's really interesting. Some really cool concepts attached to dust here. And this is one of the things that I really like about the book series, the way it jumbles together kind of faith and science in interesting ways. And
yeah, for all its claims to be, people say that it's anti-religion. I actually think it's very pro-religion and very spiritual. It's anti-secular structures around religion, around faith.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it's anti-repression in a lot of ways. Yeah, and like it seems to advocate for like maintaining a sense of wonder while also being really curious about the world and not being afraid to bring like a scientific quantitative rigor to how it's actually structured. So it was really cool to get some of these conversations in this episode. I wish we'd gotten this sort of thing earlier in the series, mm-hmm. Because I think it was some of the best stuff we've gotten totally. In the series, and is one of the things that makes his Dark Materials more than just a generic coming of age sort of action story
with fantasy stuff. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Two smaller dust bears.
Bear battle. Didn't like it.
Didn't like it. Okay.
But liked a couple of things. Yeah. I liked the dive bombing hawk demons were obviously super cool. I think everybody liked those.
Yeah, that was cool.
A lot of it just didn't make sense. Like, why do all the bears have the same armor as Yorick?
Yeah.
Where did they all come from? They all just, like, come bounding out from behind Asriel's lab. But we have been told Asriel's lab is, like, far away from the palace. So, like, why were they up there? It's very unclear where everything is happening. Mm-hmm. A lot of commentators have mentioned this. You mentioned this. Mm-hmm. It was, like, very confusing. Also, I wanted to see the fire hurler in action.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to talk about a fire hurler, you got to show it.
You don't see any actual combat.
No, you don't.
You don't see enemy combatants clashing at all.
Yeah.
You just see a bear fall. You see people jumping out of planes.
You see Lyra covering her ears, which you said, like, makes sense. She's 12 years old. She's into, like, a firefight. But it just doesn't make for engaging viewing.
No.
And again, this is where, like, you can claim budget, but, like, I'm most interested in what actually makes it to the screen, however you want to do it. And this just was not visually interesting, in my opinion. Also, it just, like, why is it here?
What's like, happening? What's the logic? I wish there's somebody to just sit down and be like, what is the logic of what's happening? There is a shot where you see the Zeppelin against the mountain, and then you see the people that jumped out of the Zeppelin very, very far from where the fight's supposed to be happening.
Right.
And it was because it was a pretty shot to see the explosion that happens when Roger's demon's cut, and, like, that was the choice, as opposed to let's get in here and show why the hell. What are they doing? What are they fighting? Are they all trying to stop Asriel? You have a Zeppelin. You could have stopped Asriel.
Right.
So what what exactly is happening here is not very clear. It's just like, oh, it's battle time.
Right.
And that stuff, like Battle of the Bastards and all that, that stuff matters because you know what's at stake.
Yeah.
And you know the logistics and you know why things are happening the way they are.
Right. And your understanding of characters within the battles change.
Helm's Deep. You can't just like
give
somebody Helm's Deep. You have to have things that happen before it and things that happen after it that explain why that happened in that particular way.
We watched this up against a battle in Witcher, the new Witcher series.
Oh, so good.
That was just phenomenal. Very Helm's Deep-y and just very...
And also very clearly showing some signs of not having a Helm's Deep budget and not having a Game of Thrones budget.
Totally,
And still being big budget, but you could see some like little corners being cut. Didn't care at all because it was incredibly well thought out, well executed, and logistic. On the plus side, when Yorick takes her away, their scene is very touching.
Totally, it was.
That was
when they get to the bridge.
It hit the mark for me.
Yeah. And in general, we've really liked York's character himself.
Yes.
So it was agreed. Nice to get a little sort of sign off.
Yeah. He wasn't perfect. He had some weird sarcasm that bears don't do sarcasm. But,
right.
And his whole fight thing, whatever. But him as Lyra's protector.
Yeah.
I buy it.
Totally.
And when you see them touch noses and say goodbye, yeah. It is whatever they set up paid off. That you feel that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you really do.
Last one.
Last one is the witches. This is like a mini despair. Maybe it should be this funny. I don't know. But the witches obviously aren't in this. In the books, you know why, or at least you get credible reasons why, because the book does a great job of explaining, like, witch politics are really complicated. They're different than human politics. There's a lot going on. And basically, it's just a nice way to be like, if witches aren't around to save the day, it's because they're doing witch things elsewhere that are just as important.
Right.
It's very like Lord of the Rings with Gandalf. Like,
right.
He's got a lot of wizard shit going on that you don't understand, but there's a good reason why he's not here just like helping everybody. We don't obviously get any of that in the series. Mm-mm. The one time we see Serafina Pekkala, like, actually fight, she takes out, like, an entire regiment of Tartars.
In 1 second.
In one second.
She ends the fight. She ends the war. So if you can do that at all times and you don't explain why they wouldn't be there,
yeah,
then it's like, well, what are we even doing here, guys?
If they have a whole clan, if she's a queen of a whole band of witches, you couldn't spare one of those witches for 10 minutes
right?
to come end the entire war?
Or if the witches are doing a whole lot of things, can't she just take 2 minutes to end a war that is literally going to start the biggest war any universe has ever seen?
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah, I thought the witches stuff was just not handled very well.
I agree. All right, let's get into our dust bunnies.
Yeah, little dust bunnies. We had two, I think, separate shots of Azrael's lab that were just like cut into the mountain.
Yes.
It was cool. It was well lit. It was just beautiful.
Yep.
Yeah.
We liked Cecilia walking backwards with his little ferret butt or whatever he had, just backwards. Yeah.
It was adorable. Stel Maria can do math.
Yeah, apparently Stel Maria can do math.
We have
a lot of questions about what demons learn, when they learn it. I know you have to teach a demon to read. We have lots of questions. So can Stel Maria do all the advanced mathematics that,
And it seems to make sense, but like this seemed to indicate, at least in the show, that they can.
Yeah.
And so that was nice to get that little bit of data. What is Mrs. Coulter doing with her monkey before Father McPhail comes
in? I need to know. That was not an accident. What was happening there?
Every review I read mentioned it. No one had any idea what it was. It seems to be really important, but also totally opaque. Again, to me, this is just like...
Also, she's mad to be interrupted. As mentioned, this is a very friendly
show,
so I don't think it's anything sexual.
Yeah.
The only thing I can think of is that it's some sort of self-harm.
Like, is it religious penance kind of thing? That we will see in later books, certain religious characters do penance. I don't think that's necessarily spoiler.
Like plugging.
Flailing
but I think,
themselves.
I think
that sort
that's
of thing.
Off screen, though, and I doubt they're going to show it.
Right. I'm just saying that it's part of this world. In this world. Yeah.
But again, like, that she wasn't moving. Like, what is this? Was she pulling his hair? Like, what's going on? What was that?
It was just...
It's a weird choice to leave unexplained.
Yeah, exactly. Because it seems, the way they framed it, that it was really important for her character. But no one I've talked to or read has any idea what it was.
Nope.
Father McPhail's line, "We have firepower and belief." I just thought it was interesting because we've talked about in the past the way the Magisterium does have the firepower, but they're much more internally divided than like the Egyptians or Lee Scoresby and Yorick and Lyra and all them. And like their internal unity is kind of their strength of the sort of underdog group. And so it's interesting to hear Father McPhail, who himself is like deeply devout, it seems, in a way that Mrs. Coulter and Azrael and others aren't, thinks that he, like, they actually have belief on their side, probably because his personal conviction is so strong.
Yeah, I think they just tell themselves stuff.
Yeah.
Because they're hypocritical and they're the church and they are what they are.
Yeah, that's possible.
Yeah, I loved when they walked into Azrael's lab and you hear Father McPhail going, "There's some sort of encampment in the living room for where Roger and Lyra are." It's like, okay, boomer.
Okay, boomer.
It's, yeah. Some sort of encampment. It's a child's... Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is probably not intentional, but the shot of Will walking down the road and you see like high walls on both sides of him and the camera kind of pans around and shows that he's walled in on all sides. It may just be that that's what streets in suburban England look like, which mm-hmm. I think they do. But anyway, it was a nice metaphorical shot of like the walls, like literally and metaphorically closing in on Will. And like he needs some way out right before he discovers the portal.
Yeah.
And that's another one for me, but I always get a rise out of that is the son of another world.
Yeah.
Like, feel it on your skin. That's a cool line.
That is.
It was cool in this episode. It's cool in the book.
So we're going to talk about spoilers now.
Spoilers.
One day we'll be able to afford a sound effect here. So if you haven't read the books, again, leave your job, leave your family, go read the books. All right. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Spoilers. Okay. Did Will walk into the same portal as Boreal? And how does that make any sense? I'm so confused and worried about this.
They cannot gloss over this. It will screw up the audience's understanding of portals for the entire series if he just ends up in Chitigatse going through the same portal that Boreal
took. He is. I think he's going to end up in Chitigatse. I think they're never going to explain it. I think we saw bricks through the thing, and I think that was the tower. I think he's going to end up in the
just
tower.
Just straight in the tower.
Straight into finding the knife. And then he's going to find Lyra afterwards.
So this is how they're going to get through Subtle Knife in 8 episodes?
Yes.
They're just going to cut out large
That's my
parts
prediction.
Of it until it's incoherent?
That's okay. My prediction. He ends up in the tower.
I hope you're wrong. I bet you're right.
If they don't explain this, I don't know what to say. I did say, somebody said like, oh, and Asriel does his thing. It shakes all the worlds around. And I don't think that's true.
I don't think that doesn't seem to be how the books work.
Yeah. And the book never addressed this either, but how does Asriel go into Chitigatse? The specters are there.
Oh, yeah.
But the specters are there because of what Asriel does, the big rift he creates.
Right.
And it doesn't seem like here he's created the same big rift. He's created one door of a similar size to the one that Boreal goes through. So maybe that'll be fine. Maybe they're not going to do the specters. Yeah. That would be a... That talk about internal logic ripping away.
Oh, you can't not do the specters. Especially, I love the idea that Elaine somehow got spectered a little bit, and that's why she's a little off.
Me too.
Even though her actual diagnosis seems a little different on the show than in the book, where she's just like
she's less
kind
functional.
Of not there.
Yeah, she's less functional in the book. You said that maybe they can explain it by saying that all this time Boreal was going through two portals.
Yeah.
Making a stop off at a way station and then heading into...
I really hope not.
Nope. But headcanon not accepted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially because they spent so much time showing us that incredible giant gothic greenhouse that Boreal like went into before he went through the portal.
No. And there's stones. There's golden stones on the other side. I even took a screenshot of it. They're not going to say
not
a thing.
Be happy.
They're just going to end
That's
up...
It.
We thought for a moment that it wasn't the same one. And we went through very, very carefully looking at visual cues. And it's the same door. And that doesn't make sense. That window goes from Lyra's world to Will's world, period. Chitigatse is another world. It's the central world that connects all the world. It's like imagine one of those spinny toys as when you were a kid. It's got all lights all around the disc. That's Chitigatse with all doors going off into all different worlds.
And this is one of the problems with having Boreal actually interact with Will in this episode, is that he has to come through a portal that is at least nominally close to Will, but it wouldn't make sense that there would be two portals in like Will's town necessarily, right? So right off the bat, this gets like tricky to explain. And it seemed like in the beginning you saw Boreal travel a lot, but towards the end he just seems to go back and forth really quickly, which means like the whole suggest is in the
town.
They could
have just had
it in
Oxford. There could have just been another one in Oxford someplace. It's problem solved. Then Will finds one in London. Also, he finds it not because the cat goes through it, which is another bit of CGI they didn't want to do. He just follows a cat.
Yeah, and then he just finds it.
Right, which is just a nitpick. That's a smallest nitpick. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
But I just don't think he would have followed a cat through the...
That, I don't know. Having been a 15-year-old boy, especially one who, like, doesn't have much going on because he can't really go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. You would have followed the cat.
I would have, if I saw, like, a little hole in the fence in a public park, I don't think it would have been out of character to, like, be like, oh, let me just see where this goes.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
That I kind of got. So this episode is called Betrayal. in the recap in the beginning, we get the voiceover of the master saying Lyra will commit a great betrayal. Mm-hmm. And those of us who have read all three books know that the betrayal is not,
nope,
not
this
Roger.
Is not it.
Yeah,
this
is not it. So I hope they're just, that's like a little sleight of hand. I will be personally, again, like really disappointed if they never revisit this. And so the viewing audience is just supposed to understand that, like, this is Lyra's betrayal of Roger, which it just isn't.
She didn't betray him,
yeah.
First of all. Like, come on.
I don't think so, too. Especially when the betrayal moment is revealed in the third book. Mm-hmm. It's just such an incredible moment. It's like one of the great book reveal moments, in my opinion. If they do choose to discard it, it will just, I don't know, be another inexplicable decision. Again, we shouldn't get mad at them before they do it.
I'm a little mad.
Yeah.
I'm a little mad. I'm waiting to not be mad. We'll find out. Okay. End of the year. Time for bests and worsts.
All right. Yeah. So number one on our season's best is the widening of the story, the expansion of the viewpoints past just Lyra's eyes.
Yeah. We got so much more breadth in the world. We got to meet so many more people. We got to see a little bit more of how all the machinations of the politics work. We got to go to the Magisterium. There's a lot that the books, by necessity, can't show us. Mm-hmm. And breaking that all apart and showing us a bigger His Dark Materials plane, and also bringing Will in early, you know, allowing us to really get a bird's eye view on the whole scenario.
So cool. See, I mean, seeing the alethiometer room for the Magisterium,
yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah. Number two.
We loved the acting.
Yes. Most of the performances in here were really phenomenal.
Yeah.
Daphne Keene is a standout. Mrs. Cult, I mean, Ruth Wilson was really brilliant.
Even if at times we didn't always understand
the choices
yeah. that she was making, that my guess were more scriptural than actor improv.
Yeah, though I think the monkey thing where she sort of act like the monkey.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think it was something she just sort of like did for her character and stuck.
Yeah.
Nina Sosonia is still my favorite actor in the whole thing. She plays Elaine, Will's mother, and she just does such a great job. And also that is particularly well written. With very few exceptions, the acting in this series has been great.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we've talked about Emir Wilson. Not a lot of lines, but doing a lot with his presence.
Got that face acting going.
Yeah,
got that eye acting.
Yeah.
Got that, like, is reacting in his face without mugging thing going on, which is really cool. Number three, and we've mentioned this a little bit, the way that they amped up Roger and Lyra's connection, more past the spoiler point, so we can say that is going to be an incredibly important aspect of this, particularly series three, if they get to it.
Yes.
Lyra's whole motivation, it needs to be really clear how guilty she feels about Roger.
Yeah, great job there. We want to move on to three things that we didn't love about
The worst parts.
Our three worst things, yeah. So the first one, probably the biggest one, one that we've talked about the most, is the real abdication of showing the human-demon relationship.
Yeah.
And how that really,
ooh.
Yeah, it really negatively affected multiple essential scenes in this series.
Yeah. And not just for book readers, but for the ability of people who've never seen this story before, never interacted with this story before, to not only understand what was going on, but fall in love with it the way that we do in the books because of that relationship, partly because of that relationship. They really gave away so many good hooks and so many good reasons, so many good ways to make a powerful story.
Yeah, right. And if they had just slowed down a little bit and shown us some of that, and then also just shown more demons out in the world. Mm-hmm. People on Reddit commenting who haven't read the books that they don't understand why some people have talking pets and some people don't.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a real
issue.
That's
how it breaks your heart to see.
Yeah.
To see that people think these are talking pets, which is exactly what we, you know, were feared. All right, number two, Thunderdome.
Yeah.
Thunderdome was more like little Meow Dome. not maybe that extreme, but the bear fight, the barrow fight between Jofur Ragnarsson and Yorick Bernason was not great in the actual choreography of the fight, not great in the actual visualization of the fight, and not great in the context that should give us the stakes for the fight.
Yep. Really foundational to the story in terms of what it tells us about Lyra, what it tells us about Yorick, what it tells us about the world. And this is sort of the idea of being true to yourself, which is such an essential theme of this whole story. And it was one of the really compelling ways in the book to to really demonstrate that, and like the actual real world consequences of being true or not being true to yourself, to see it really dealt with as though it was something that they just had to get through to move on, and sort of like strip it of all of its context or interest, or even for non-book readers, just having a really compelling piece of like visual storytelling. Mm-hmm. They didn't really seem concerned about any of that. Nope. Again, not having armor is, again, just one of these really inexplicable decisions.
Yeah. And I don't want to hear it was the VFX guys saying.
Right. Yeah. That's not going to. Yeah.
Don't punch down.
Yeah. yeah. Gotta be like it. And if you're like, whether the writer has the final say or the producers or the directors, I know there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen on this, and the writer is not always the person at the top of the totem pole making decisions, but
it's certainly not the VFX guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Whoever it was. It was a really a big misstep.
Yeah. Number three, all the action sequences.
Yeah. The bear fight was not the only one that really let us down. And we had some really great scenes in the book. I mean, that does Freudian slip there. We had some really...
On the nose there.
Right. We had some really great scenes in this series, but they weren't, by and large, the action scenes. And it was really disappointing from the Battle of Bullvanger, which just seemed really silly and like narratively incomprehensible in parts, to the bear fight, which you just talked about was a letdown, to the bears fighting the Tartars sort of mm-hmm. at the foot of the mountain with Azrael, which again, just you didn't understand what it was happening. You didn't understand why it was happening. They seemed to go out of their way to make a particularly like uninteresting rendition of this battle. Mm-hmm. To see them go right into the sort of like traumatized, like the music cuts out, Lyra's there holding her ears as though it's like a Saving Private Ryan or something.
Yeah. Just like, yeah, you gotta earn that.
Come on, man. Yeah. Yeah. I think this could have been a really cool mix of really compelling one-on-one exposition-y scenes that are really exploring some of these philosophical concepts, and then sort of show those concepts in action with some really cool, compelling action sequences that you have there on the page. So to see them just not really render any of those compellingly was, again, just a big disappointment.
On that note.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to cut Alethiometer this week.
We've talked a lot about the themes of the episode and about the season in general. Yeah. So,
but we do have an extra award.
Mine is Thorold.
Thorold.
Maybe not his fault, but we just got a lot of Thorold on screen. We weren't sure why. We kept getting like, oh, another Thorold scene. Mm-hmm. Cool. Mm-hmm. This is exactly where we wanted to be in the finale.
Thorold just chewing the scenery. They're like, oh man, Thorold's so great. We got to write him more scenes.
Thorold's not like, does she have a toothbrush?
Thorold, does she have a toothbrush?
Thorold just knocks Father McPhail out with the shotgun.
I love that.
But then he just puts his shotgun down when Mrs. Coulter essentially like tells him to. It was just, they didn't really know what to do with Thorold. They kind of tried to squeeze in some backstory for him, and it's just
weird.
Didn't.
It was weird. Yeah. Mine is for Serafina Pekkala for sitting this one out for no discernible reason. Serafina Pekkala, who could take out a regiment in 1 minute, nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. She's over in the Arctic Circle in her crop top doing her goop recipes.
Right. We know she's there. Like, she gave Lee his gun, so she's on Svalbard.
Yeah.
Where else? Like, what part of Svalbard is she in that she's not?
She found a good microdermabrasion treatment, and she's trying it.
Yep.
It's not a great look.
She's surprisingly good ramen on Svalbard. She's
checking it out. Surprisingly good. It's, you know, the vintage shops this time of year. It's just, you've given us no reason that you aren't there, except that she's only in the tank for Fartacorum, which doesn't track because she's talking to Lee about the universe.
Right, like we're in this war.
We're in a war, and et cetera, et cetera. And also, she's in a war, but she's going because Father Cor... Serafina Pekkala.
They didn't really know what to do with her. It just seemed like the witches are this kind of sophisticated concept on the page.
Yeah.
And they just didn't put in the time to make them make any sense, frankly.
Well, those are our extra awards. Tell us yours. You'll never do. You never tell us your extra awards. And I personally would like to hear them.
I would also like to hear them.
extraneouspod@gmail.com.
Get at us, folks.
All right, mixtape time.
Mixtape. Our first song is Ladytron with Destroy Everything You Touch.
This is one of my favorite songs.
Melissa loves this song.
It's a banger. Destroy everything you touch.
Yeah, it's for Asriel. Going back to Mrs. Coulter's line about he's reckless. He really leaves wreckage everywhere he goes, from Jordan College to his experiments with dust that I think are probably on some level motivational for Mrs. Coulter's experiments, mm-hmm. to what he does to Roger, to Lyra's like entire childhood.
Life, yes.
Yeah. To Thorold, who he just leaves in the clutches of the Magisterium. He doesn't care.
I'd say if you read Book of Dust, you realize he's not always been this way. He hasn't always been a destructive force. Always. Like a purely destructive force. Right now, it seems like he is purely a destructive force.
Yeah, the Asriel of right now is destroying everything he touches. And this is the anthem for that. The second song is by The Cure, called Blood Flowers.
I've never heard this song.
It's one of their like later songs. This world never stops, you said. This wonder never leaves. The time will never come to say goodbye. It's a very long song, so bear with us, but it's about wanting the world to be one way that lasts forever and everything is beautiful, but understanding the truth that it's not, that it's a song about innocence fading and flowers dying. And to me, it's about Lyra and it's about Roger and their relationship, and Roger really symbolizing like the hope of a better world. And Lyra, I think for a lot of the series and the book and this whole story, really wants to cling to this idea that things can be good, that the world can be good. And one of the really heartbreaking aspects is that on the show and in the book, over and over again, Lyra has to deal with the fact that that's not true. And she has to keep getting hit with that knowledge of kind of a fallen world, however you want to, you know, for whatever reason you want to attribute that to, whether it's humans or the authority or whatever. And I think this song is really about that, and sort of about Roger's death is sort of the defining moment of a world that isn't as good as we hoped it would be.
Folks.
Gang.
We've made it. I mean, we've done Golden Compass. We've done the first series of His Dark Materials.
Yeah.
We are going to still talk about Golden Compass and this series a little bit.
Oh, Subtle Knife is so cool. It's such a cool book. We're going to get into it.
Also, it's only got like 15 chapters or something, so we might just do a chapter a week.
Yeah.
And that still doesn't feel like very long. Long enough.
There'll be plenty.
The other way around.
Yeah.
So we might end up doing like, I don't know. We'll figure it out. Yeah.
If there's anything you want us to do.
Yeah.
Let us know if there's anything you'd like to hear from us for an episode.
Yeah. If you've got Subtle Knife thoughts and questions or whatever, or just in general, extraneouspod@gmail.com. We love getting comments and thoughts and stuff. Nothing makes us happier.
Totally. If we get enough like
emails.
Yeah. We might try to work in like a mailbag episode before we start Subtle Knife.
Yeah. And now remember, if you're looking for the Supernatural episodes, they're on a new feed. So you just search Extraneous in your podcast player and the Supernatural episodes will come up for you.
Yeah. And you should do that because they're awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
And you should check out all of mischiefmedia.com and all of our podcasts that are so cool. Not as cool as us, but so cool.
Lots more coming. We have a really cool one coming in the new year. What else we got? Have a happy new year, everybody.
Yeah.
It has been a joy sharing this with you insofar as we've gotten this year. A lot of hard work, but a ton of fun.
Yeah.
We've gotten closer discussing this, working on this together.
Yeah.
And we're so excited to see what comes next. Big thank you to our editor, Janelle, who does phenomenal work every week.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
Don't cut this, Janelle.
Don't cut it.
And in the new year, stay extra.
Stay extra.